Hey, everybody, this is Tom Salemi. Welcome back to Device Talks Weekly. We have a jam-packed show for you. But first, we've got some breaking Device Talks Podcast Network news. I'm here with live on the scene with Managing Editor Kayleen Brown. Kayleen, tell us what is up with the Podcast Network.
Oh, I'm so excited to share that our season two of the newly rebranded Women in MedTech with Kayleen Brown podcast has officially published on Tuesday this week. So for all of our followers, that should have already landed into your favorite podcast player. And I hope that you got a chance to listen or watch. But woo! That has been the joy of the last year and a half, and I'm so pleased to finally bring it to our audience.
It was a great episode. I got to listen to it first because, you know, I am the editorial director of Device Talks. You and Nina just have a special relationship that just oozes out of my earbuds. That sounds gross.
it's still pretty icky, but I get the sentiment. It's very oozy.
It was wonderful. I felt the warmth. So what is your plan with this podcast? We're so happy to have it back. As you mentioned, there was an earlier version of this, an earlier season, and we've been wanting to bring it back for so long, but you've been so busy helping me with other things. But it was worth the wait, I think. What are the plans?
I absolutely think it was worth the wait. Sometimes, actually, this is a theme in the episode and other episodes. Sometimes you have to take a step back to take a step forward. You'll get that theme in the episode. But with this one, season one of our, at the time, MedTech Women Talks, and it was in partnership with the nonprofit organization MedTech Women, who we love, and we wanted to broaden the guest list. So with the support and love of MedTech Women, we've rebranded it to Women in MedTech. What we did over the last year, you and I, Tom, is we wanted to talk to our audience, our listeners, our super listeners, and ask them, you know, what could we be doing differently? Are we delivering the information and the conversations that light you up the way that it lights us up? And the, without question, number one piece of feedback said, you're sitting in front of all of these MedTech leaders, but you're not asking them about leadership. You're not asking them about their journey to the positions that they're in. It's really helpful to unpack the different roles and how they fill out the ecosystem and help develop medical devices. But we want to know about the people. We want to know about their experiences. And candidly, I'd been distancing myself from that. So going into season two, I mean, that's really what we went all in on. We, of course, unpacked the roles, but it was in, if I had to do it in one sentence, it's reverse engineering the making of a MedTech leader. And the whole point of that is to widen the pathways of who gets to lead.
Absolutely. And I think you and I are the same. We love medical devices. We love the tech. But just taking our Device Talks West event a couple of weeks ago, I could point to two or three stories from people about their success or about the newfound confidence they had. I remember the message, the very kind message you got about the attendee to the Women in MedTech breakfast who just felt empowered and energized. And that's the stuff that really makes me happy. The conferences and these podcasts and those conversations are really, I think, the thing that the legacy is too strong a word. But that's the imprint I want to have on this industry. I want people to feel better about themselves and empowered to do great things because that just makes our job easier. So this is definitely doing that, Kayleen Brown. Great episode one. Anything we need to tell folks about the series at all, the entire series?
I would love to. So the series is going to come out every 3 weeks. There's two ways that you can access it. So if you are one of our super followers, the Device Talks Podcast Network, that is an audio-only version. Please follow our podcast network to get access to all of our podcasts and every single episode. If you wanted to specifically follow Women in MedTech with Kayleen Brown, please go ahead and search that on your favorite podcast player and follow, subscribe to that. It is a video version. And then you can also watch the video or just the audio and listen to that on our Device Talks YouTube page. So there's a lot of different ways to get access to it. It does come out every 3 weeks. The lineup Tom, for the next few episodes, I can't even. So I'm going to jump on, if you'll allow me, on another intro to a Device Talks Weekly episode to tell you about those upcoming ones. But they are so good and so exciting. They just keep getting better and better and better. To our audience, I have an ask. In this episode, Nina and I, we really look at how Medtronic is trying to raise visibility and help to solve the problem of women heart health. But Nina actually makes a business case for empathy. So at the end of the episode, I've asked our audience what comes up for them when they think about empathy in relation to a healthy medtech ecosystem. And I really sincerely am interested in the answer to that question. So for our audience who's listening, if you've listened to that episode, what do you think when you think of empathy in medtech? Is there a business case for it? Nina and I both say yes. So follow me on LinkedIn, message me on LinkedIn, and please let me know your thoughts on that. And as always, thank you so much, Tom and Device Talks, for the opportunity and to our audience for listening, because I have looked at the analytics and they're really good. So
I was going to ask you about that after we stopped pushing record, but I'm really happy to hear it and not at all surprised. So thank you for all your hard work, not only with that podcast series, but every podcast series. And thank you for continuing to drive this industry forward. You're a fantastic partner and a real attribute to the industry. And glad you're on my team.
Oh, I love that. And I'm going to use your word, gushy ooziness.
Yeah, that sounds terrible. You're right. All right. So thank you, Kayleen, for joining us. And folks, we've got a great episode for you coming up, brought to you by our very, very good friends at Confluent. I'm going to be speaking with Dr. Rob Cowell. He's the Vice President and General Manager of Cardiac Pacing at Medtronic a little bit later. But first, of course, we'll have Chris Newmarker in the Newmarker's Newsmakers with a very special guest to talk about a very cool new addition to the Mass Device portfolio. And before I let you go, one final ask. Please join us on Tuesday at 4 p.m. for our Device Talks Tuesdays episode. It's called When and Why Your Design Needs Micro Molding. So you can go to devicetalks.com to register for that. You can watch it live and get your questions answered immediately. Or if you need to watch it at a different time, you can still get your questions answered. It just takes a little longer, but it's going to be a great show regardless. So go to devicetalks.com to find that, to find our new Women in MedTech podcast episode, and all the other cool stuff that we do. So let's get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Chris Newmarker, how are you, sir?
Hey, doing well, Tom. Doing well. I'm especially looking forward to that Ohio State Purdue game this weekend. That should be an easy one for us. So,
you are a bastard. Oh. we had 2-0, a strong start. I was hoping by this time it would be a competitive game, but I'm not even sure if my son's going to the game. He's become disillusioned with this team.
The basketball has been doing great over Purdue.
Actually, they lost the first preseason. I forget how they did the second one. So, but they're ranked very highly and expected to do very well. So,
all right, good,
entertaining season. But yes,
get some good basketball, and I'll stop talking smack about the Buckeye. Talking about the Buckeyes, because we still got the Michigan game coming up. So
you can talk all the smack you want to talk. We'll see what happens on Saturday. I'm not placing any wages.
If Purdue wins, they'll be carrying the coach off the field.
We can hope. Anyway, that's not why we're here today, Chris Newmarker.
No, we are not.
We've got a guest in the booth. We've got my former colleague, Crystal Larson. We used to work together way back in the day at Elsevier Business Intelligence. Crystal, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Of course, Chris, you've been working with Crystal over the past couple of months. Tell folks about the new report that Mass Device just rolled out.
Absolutely. Well, Like Crystal has written a more than 100-page report about the CGM market that we are now selling on Mass Device. It just launched last week. This is the first of what we're calling our MedTech Market Intelligence Reports. And I'm especially excited about this because, I mean, my gosh, since the late like 2000s, I mean, Mass Device has been a go-to business journal for the medical device industry. You know, we've really, you know, tried to be a center of intelligence about the industry to, you know, to MedTech insiders. And this is just like taking it to the next level, like offering, you know, an extensive, deep dive, comprehensive report on an industry that we are selling on Mass Device. And, you know, we're going to have more of these coming out in coming weeks, like looking at the surgical robotics market and the transcatheter heart valves market. But Crystal wrote our debut report about the CGM market, which is just really, really exciting.
Crystal, and you're working with the team that you've been working with for quite a long time, I know, in putting together the report. I've got the attention span. I've watched too much TV when I was a kid, too much Brady Bunch and all the stuff that happened in the afternoon. My attention span is shot. So if I focus more than an hour on a topic like this podcast, I lose interest. How do you dive so deep on specific areas within these that you're focusing on, in this case, CGMs? And what's your process? Like, how do you find all the data that you're offering in this report?
It's really comprehensive. Process. I do a lot of research. I look at all the 10Ks and the webcasts.
Oh, wow.
I look at all the trends. I look at the corporate strategies that you have to kind of dive into to locate, and with the CGM area and emerging competitors. And, you know, I also provide, you know, research on the diabetes itself and mm-hmm. all the technology and portfolios that these companies are developing. And then I calculate a forecast, and, you know, I also look up the past history of revenues for CGMs, which aren't necessarily obvious, you know, in the 10Ks. Like Freestyle Libre, I had to pull on individual quarterlies and calculate it, and also look at their growth expectations that aren't necessarily obvious. And so I provided those, and I provide historical sales from 2022 even on for the major competitors. So we've got Abbott, of course, and Dexcom and Medtronic and Senseonics. And then we provide historical sales from 2022, 23, 24, and then 25. And then I forecast out to 2030 based on all this information and based on their expectations and my expectations. So I put on my analyst hat, uh-huh. and then I do my own expected growth CAGRs for each company and provide those forecasts. But then I also, which is kind of difficult, segment it out by United States, which, of course, you know, United States is a big, huge market for this, but also outside the U.S. So that's kind of a breakdown that is useful for these companies to see. And most of them are trying to expand their international markets also, because, you know, diabetes is a global issue. There's, you know, 600 million people with diabetes around the world.
Absolutely.
Really fast. Yeah.
Huge market. So I could see that, you know, whether it's, you know, somebody higher up at a medical device company is doing strategy or analysis or an investor. I mean, it sounds like the value is that this is a comprehensive report that's probably mirroring their work. And like, by purchasing this report, you know, from someone like you who's been doing these types of reports for years, I mean, this is a really great way to double check your own work. They can double check their own work. They can really, you know, see if they're on the right track with how they're forecasting the space.
Yeah, because they'll collect their own intelligence and competitive, you know, there's competitive analysis too and competitive intelligence. And so all of these companies want to track each other, and then also to look at the emerging startups too that are entering. And, you know, are we going to be impacted by this company that's entering the market? A lot of wearable technologies out there, so it's just a really good comprehensive market, like we titled the Market Intelligence Report, so that anyone in that area or strategies and or R&D CEOs and, you know, executives within those companies that are interested. Also pharmaceutical companies, it does a lot of crossover with their pipelines too, that might be interested too. So, and on all the wearable app makers. And
if your business plan is going to be interacting in some way with that CGM market, I mean, this is like a really good, mm-hmm. and I can say that because I edited this report. I went through all, my gosh, over 100 pages, you know, and this is like very extensive.
Insulin pump manufacturers will be interested too, because this is a closely related market too. And there's so many pumps out there that type 1 diabetes, people with type 1 are using. So, there's a lot of crossover there. It's just in the diabetes technology market.
And the time, I think, is the issue. I mean, Chris, you and I, we try to do extensive reporting. You go through 10-Ks. You listen to a lot of earnings calls. And that's to go through those and to really pull out the nuggets of knowledge is like, it takes a long time. You can say, like, I can listen to an earnings report, but to really pull out the things that matter and to put it in a digestible tool, I think is really valuable. And I understand, Crystal, that there's some other tools that you've included there as well, some spreadsheets and things that folks can
tap into. In addition to that, I put all my Excel spreadsheet for people to use that where I did all my calculations. So we've, you know, given the forecast and the market share and all that, so that if you need to use that to compare to your own forecast or expectations. So that's a little useful thing.
If you're starting from scratch, I mean, this is a booster pill. If you're starting from scratch and you need to build something now, like you're going from step one to step eight just by buying this report. So I think it's a pretty valuable resource.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the main chapters of this report, we got a diabetes overview. You've got a then you're like moving on to like going over all these different details about continuous glucose monitoring technology. Then it's moving on to like actually going into that, you know, continuous glucose monitoring market, like what the global, you know, including like a global forecast for the market, you know, forecast for like how the market is going to grow in the US and outside of the US, and then looking at like the shares for those individual companies inside the market, you know. So I mean, including like, you know, getting to a point where Crystal, you had like pie charts like showing how the shares for Abbott and Dexcom and Medtronic, you know, soon to be MiniMed, Senseonics were going to be changing, you know, over the rest of the decade. And just a little tease, like one of those companies is like growing its, you know, size of the pie there, but at the same time the pie itself is just growing so rapidly because there's so much untapped market there right now for CGM. So I mean there's a cost that people have to pay for this report, but I mean, I can just assure, like go editing this and looking at this, I mean, there's just like a wealth of information here that you wouldn't just like normally get. You know, I mean, there's outfits that are, you know, doing like projections, but I mean, it's like basically like, oh, the market's this big, we think, and what, like population is growing. I mean, you're going way beyond that.
Yeah, I'm really confident of the numbers too. And, you know, I used a lot of sources directly from the companies. So the base year is very confident and growth rates are very confident because, you know, this is just a phenomenal market. And you know, a lot of the companies expected to double their revenues by 2030, so it's the sky's the limit, you know, because the market is so large and there's a low penetration when you look at type 2 diabetes too, and pre-diabetes. So it's an exciting market and I'm very proud of the report.
That's great. And Chris, just last item, no against the newsmakers, but Mass Device, I mean, it's the preeminent news source in med tech. I would think just being able to add this level, you're not only reporting the stuff that happens today and we'll be reporting on it tomorrow, but now you're actually, in a way, helping to kind of foster future news stories by giving people tools like this to really grow their companies. How does it feel to kind of move deeper into the, we have some reports, but not to this degree and not to this level.
Exactly. I mean, we've been, you know, rolling out, you know, reports that we gate on Mass Device that are free, that are, I mean, those are, I mean, they're, and they're good reports. We're giving people a nice overview of the market. We're, you know, giving, you know, packaging together, you know, stories that give people insights into the market. But this is just taking it to a whole other level. And, you know, I've said before, I feel very fortunate that I've been, you know, covering, you know, medtech for, you know, so many years, because at its best, it's about like improving and saving people's lives. And I mean, this is just really exciting that we can, like, you know, bring this, this, you know, new product out there for, you know, our audience that I'm really thinking could, you know, do some good. And as you said, like, yeah, push some more innovation. Let's get some more cool stuff going. I mean, it'll be awesome that we can like help inform the people who are innovating, and then we'll get to report on those innovations. So this is very exciting. That's fantastic.
All right, cool. Well, we are a news podcast, so we'll move into the newsmakers, but we'll put a link to the report in the show notes, and folks again can go to Mass Device reports, right? Reports up top of the website.
Yeah, it's probably the easiest way to get to that is just go to the top of Mass Device, and in our top bar, we've got reports on the far right. You can click on that, and then you can get to our MedTech Market Intelligence Reports page, and, you know, click to view that report, and we'll be rolling out more of these reports. So you'll be able to, you know, click to view our reports, plural, soon. So if you want to go to it directly, it's massdevice.com/medtech-market-intelligence-reports.
All right. Fantastic. Well, let's roll into newsmakers, Chris. Number five, written by a new reporter of yours, right? A new writer on the team.
Oh, yeah. We got somebody new writing around here. Like, we had a Crystal. Crystal, you wrote, you gave us this great over 100-page report. And then you wrote an article too. Oh, my God. Wow. This is awesome. So
I was just trying to pick the key points, you know, takeaways from this report. And there's so many. You know, there's so many positive market drivers. So I just wanted to list a couple.
Yeah, you've got 12 things you need to know about the CGM market, which I think is bold.
It was pretty good. You got 12. 12 is a good number.
Yeah, 12 is always a good number.
Fantastic. Let's review one and two. So the huge population of people that could benefit from CGMs. And what excites you about this space most of all?
600 million. Totally exciting, because that's why this market is one of the reasons, just one of them, why it's growing so high is there's so much, the penetration is really relatively low compared to the number of people with diabetes. There's like 600 million people with diabetes in the world. So that's like, you know, two United States populations full of people, which is incredible. So it kind of floored me when I looked at it that way. And it's expanding really. The population is expected to grow to 850 million by 2050.
And then that flips into like your second point there, that this is like a market already that's like worth tens of billions of dollars, the CGM market.
Very so, because I've been tracking this since quite a long time, and I just watched it grow, and you know. So it's like it's in the tens of millions expected to grow, and the report details the financials and expectations, but you know, the manufacturers are exceeding their expectations. So it's like growing in the mid-teens or higher. So there's a lot of potential for all competitors, even new competitors and startups, to expand their sales and really take hold of a great opportunity to help people with diabetes.
Well, welcome to the newsmakers. You've got your first, I'm sure, of many stories there. Chris, what's number four in the newsmakers?
Number four on the list. This is from a senior editor, Sean Hooley. And this is Coherence Neuro raising a $10 million seed round for a BCI that aids in cancer treatment. So this is kind of a new use for, you know, BCIs, though it actually kind of, when I think about it, makes sense, because we've been reporting a lot on NovoCure and its cancer treating wearables that use electrical fields. So I mean, it makes this is a really interesting idea to actually have a BCI that uses electrical fields to treat a cancer inside the brain.
Yeah, and just looking at the report looking at Sean's write up, it's really fascinating. So Coherence Neuro's system monitors cancer progression and delivers targeted stimulation to overwrite cancer's bioelectric signaling. That's remarkable. I mean, that's this is something that I know we had another report this week, and I thought that was this with the Dana and Christopher Reeve Foundation. I think they provided some funding for a BCI that would help folks who have lost, or paralyzed in some form or fashion. I thought that's what this was, but this is just mind-blowing to think that...
This is mind-blowing. And yeah, as a communications professional, I'm all for communications, except when it's between cancer cells. Let's stop that. They don't need to be talking to each other. Let's get them to stop doing that.
This is the coolest industry. Coolest industry.
So cool. And really, we're living the dream, man.
All right, what's number three?
Number three on the list. This is heading back in the diabetes space. And this is another technology that I was like, wow, this is... got a wow out of me. Aqua Medical just got a FDA investigational device exemption to go ahead with studying its radio frequency vapor ablation catheter. You know that can be used in a procedure to treat diabetes.
And this is something that not similar, but or not identical, but Fractal Health, of course, had another ablation effort that they had taken on initially that I'm not sure where it is at anymore, but they had something similar as a treatment for diabetes. So, wow. I mean, it sounds like you might have a new report, Crystal, in a couple of years, released a couple of...
That's an interesting area.
A couple of new pages.
They're piloting a clinical trial. They're calling it the proximal intestinal mucosal ablation procedure, using radio frequency ablation it's basically, the idea is that it replicates, you know, the metabolic benefits of a gastric bypass without having to have this like super invasive procedure to achieve that. Instead, you're getting an endoscope in there and doing an ablation procedure.
Yeah. So Fractal, I'm looking now, had Revita, which is an outpatient endoscopic procedure designed to durably modify the duodenal dysfunction via hypothermal ablation in order to restore metabolic health. But it looks like they're targeting obesity as opposed to diabetes. I think diabetes might have been initial focus. But again, this industry is the best. Very cool.
Very cool.
What's number two, Kristen Marker?
Well, you know, number two on the list, you know, this is just interesting. We had two of the top orthopedic device companies are having a rough, you know, as we're talking here on Wednesday, and they've had a rough time on the stock market this week with their Q3 reports. Zimmer Biomet, had its, with their report, at this point their stock is down, over 10% over the last last 5 days, over their Q3 report. And then, Smith and Nephew over the last, five days, they've seen their stock as well go down more than 11%. Both of them, saying parts of their business, seeing weaknesses. I mean, Zimmer Biomet saying that, they identified, weaknesses in their business near the end of the three quarter when it came to business outside of the United States. And, Smith and Nephew saying that even though they were, seeing some strong growth in their hip business in the United States, their knee business is seeing weakness. So, there's kind of interesting to see two large companies in that space, seeing some weaknesses here and there. I mean, there was so much growth in ortho coming out of COVID just because of just so much pent up demand, like people had been foregoing, knee or hip procedures, during the height of COVID. Now we're kind of in a new era for the orthopedic space. We're seeing Johnson & Johnson saying like, hey, we want to focus on cardio, Synthes is going to be better off like on its own. I mean, we're seeing that over there as well.
And do we have a report yet from Stryker? Have they had their quarterly report?
Stryker was out late last week. Stryker's doing better. I mean, Stryker had, they reported, they raised revenue guidance. They're not the top end of their earnings per share guidance, you know, and they beat the street in the third quarter. But, you know, even them, their stock is a bit down right now. I mean, and it's mirroring what's going on with the S&P 500, but still, it's not like, you know, it's not like huge, like, woo, like things are great. You know, I mean, it's definitely, you know, Stryker with their report, like it's faring a lot better than some of their top competitors.
Looks like it reported some growth in the orthopedic sector. So, all right, well, bears watching. I'm not gonna offer my 2-cent opinion on what the heck's going on here. But
I know it's. I think it's more just like pointing that out, and hopefully we'll, you know, this is just a bump in the road for some of those, you know, major companies who are, you know, doing a lot of cool things. So we'll just keep on following it. You know, try to follow the analyst reports, see what's going on with this.
Well, is this one of your procedures kind of taper off at the end of the year, or is it usually a good time for these companies?
That's a good question.
With their procedures.
You know, I think my general understanding is usually procedures pick up near the end of the year.
Because they want to get their,
blowing the deductible, you're like, insurance. I better get that. Yeah, right. Before my deductible resets, I better get that.
So then whatever. That's more concerning then. Okay.
Huh. Yeah. But this was the third quarter. So, yeah, that's a good point. Like, let's see what happens in the fourth quarter with
November, December.
Maybe the weather was very nice and people just delayed their surgeries. Could be
It was just such a nice.
Could be anything. All right. What's
some of the most expensive surgeries, real quick? Hip replacement. And, you know, so maybe that's an economic factor with patients here.
Absolutely. What's number one, Chris Newmarker?
You know, number one, Melissa, is something also kind of a trend we've been seeing on Mass Device this week, which is like we've had two high up people at Medtronic announce their retirements this week. Greg Smith, who is the EVP of Enterprise Operations, is retiring. He's going to be joining a not yet named private equity held organization. And then we have, you know, Medtronic Chief Technology Innovation Officer Ken Washington announcing that he'll be leaving. So, you know, we've been seeing a lot of turnover in that kind of like high up executive ranks at Medtronic.
It's a little concerning, but maybe because of their divestiture of the diabetes, they're streamlining their business a little, or
maybe, you know, there's also the Elliott investment management, you know, the activist investors they're now working with as well so this is going on at the same time as well now that we're getting some of these announcements. I mean, don't know whether that's connected,
could be timing as well. I know Greg Smith had joined a couple of years ago. I think he'd been in Walmart previously. It kind of came in during the when supply chain was on fire. So you know, he worked his way through that, and maybe it's time just to move on. So
yeah, it could be. I mean, yeah, they were, you know, I mean, Walmart has a great reputation for, you know, logistics and whatnot. And, you know, when Greg Smith joined in 2021, it was kind of like, you know, yes, MedTech is very different from, you know, making sure that, Pop-Tarts are, you know, stocked down at the Gulf Coast stores, you know, when the hurricane's coming in. But I mean, there are lessons to be learned there. Maybe, you know, Medtronic could get some of that, some of those insights. But yeah, maybe it's time for Greg to move on. The same Ken, actually, Washington was kind of similar as well. I mean, his experience, you know, came from Amazon, Ford Motor Company. So, I mean, he was somebody else who was like, Amazon is doing like really cool things with software and even artificial intelligence. You know, they were already thinking about that when Ken Washington joined, and they're like, let's get some of that, some of those insights, you know, into Medtronic more like with that.
I forgot about that. So I don't think they've announced replacement yet, but it'll be interesting if the new executives are more medtech to the core, or more like more lifelong medtech.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe they want someone more focused on medtech.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
You know, MDO managing editor Jim Hammer and reached out to Medtronic about Ken Washington's departure. And you know, Ken's title was Chief Technology and Innovation Officer, and a Medtronic spokesperson said they've got succession planning going on for a new Chief Technology Officer. So Jim's actually got a little question out like innovation too, or are we just doing Chief Technology Officer? But I mean, maybe they're tweaking like what they'd like to get That position as well. I think we'll find out a little more about that. But
all right. Well, it's a bunch of big news and a new addition to the Mass Device portfolio with your reports. Chris, one more time, where can folks find the report?
Can find our MedTech Market Intelligence reports over at massdevice.com/medtech-market-intelligence-reports, or you just go to the top bar on the homepage and click on reports like on the far right, and they'll take you there as well.
Well, Crystal, thanks for joining us on the podcast and for joining the Mass Device team and bringing these great reports to our readers.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. It's exciting.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. Yeah, this is awesome.
All right. Thank you, Chris Newmarker and Crystal Larson. Once again, I hope you will check out the new report on Mass Device on the continuous glucose monitoring market. Now, before we continue this episode, I'd like to bring in our sponsor, Confluent Medical.
I'm here with Tom Ditter. He's Senior Director of Product Development at Confluent Medical. Tom, Confluent's made quite a bit of noise in the medical device space this year, specifically surrounding Nitinol, which has been just really an exciting topic of the year and of the past couple of years. Before the company was Confluent, it was known as NDC, which stands for Nitinol Devices and Components. Can you give us a quick overview of how Confluent got to where it is today and how your history is connected to NDC and to Nitinol?
And the philosophy of the founders was to understand the fundamental material science behind Nitinol and to use that to design and process components made from Nitinol. Now, Confluent continues its legacy today throughout its capabilities. It focuses on the material science of not just Nitinol, but also polymers and textiles as well.
That's really interesting. And as a contract manufacturer, your job is to assist OEMs in taking a design from prototype to production. Can you give us some examples of how Confluent accomplished this recently? A few cases you've worked on. I know you have to probably be sparse on details, but what are some of the things you've been working on?
Confluent is fully integrated. It has the capability to take a product from prototyping to development, optimization, and full-scale manufacturing. We recently just worked with an OEM on a novel neurovascular stent. We assisted them in initial design iterations, process development to full-blown manufacturing.
Tom, Confluent Medical is a contract manufacturer, which means you assist OEMs in taking a design from prototype to production. Can you give us an example of how Confluent has recently accomplished this?
Yeah, yes, as you mentioned, Confluent is fully integrated. We do have the capability to take a product from initial prototyping to full-scale manufacturing. We recently accomplished this with a OEM that was working on a novel neurovascular stent. We worked with them on the initial design iterations, took it to process, development, optimization, and finally to full-scale manufacturing.
All right, we'll pick up this conversation a little later in the podcast. If you want to find out more about Confluent, go to confluentmedical.com. That's confluentmedical.com. Now let's begin my conversation with Dr. Rob Cowell. He is the Vice President and General Manager of Cardiac Pacing at Medtronic. Well, Rob Cowell, welcome back to the podcast. We were just talking before I pushed record. You and I have had the good fortune of talking before.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be back.
And you've got a new title to me anyway, and to the podcast that we'd love to unpack. Since it's been a while since we've had you on, I would like to just rewind way back and just understand how you found your way first into medicine and then into industry. So why'd you become a doctor, Rob?
Yeah. So look, my father was a physician. My grandfather was a physician. I grew up with this kind of tradition. They were also scientists, and I originally have a PhD in molecular genetics, but actually rerouted that kind of laboratory science vision and went into medicine when I just fell in love with just taking care of patients and the procedural side of medicine.
And what was your specialty? What did you focus
on as a physician? So went into cardiac electrophysiology. So, you know, circa late 90s, if you wanted to mix kind of medicine, technology, procedures, a touch of the voodoo and unknown, there was nothing better than EP. I mean, it was really the place to be.
And does EP give you sort of what is the patient engagement like with EP? Are you consulting with patients up until the procedure, or are you sort of just doing the procedure while they're under and you're not having that level of engagement as others?
I think what's fun about it, or what was fun about it when I was in practice, was in fact the opposite. It wasn't just you do the procedure and you know, step in and step out. Because these kind of arrhythmia situations are complicated, oftentimes you'd get the referral and you'd spend, you know, half a year working with a patient to get to the right place and then, you know, do a procedure or just continue to follow them. And then afterwards you were following them as well. Because for example, if you implanted a pacemaker or an ICD, you were adjusting that for the rest of their lives while they had
interesting. Yeah. So you have a real relationship with them.
In fact, it's funny. You bring this up. The very first patient I did a procedure on, a flutter ablation in 2001 when I was an attending, emailed me the other day, and we're going to have breakfast together.
Oh, really?
Yeah. 25 years later.
Just out of the blue? They just wanted to?
Yeah, just, you know, we just had a long, you know, he had an ablation, he had a device. He had another ablation, you know, and still ticking in his 90s. So it's
great. How great is that?
Oh, it's awesome.
That's fantastic. So what led you in 2017 to join Medtronic as chief medical officer for cardiac rhythm management?
Yeah, no, it was one of those things where in addition to the practice, I was doing stuff with the hospital, an accountable care organization, and the CV service line. And I was doing stuff with Heart Rhythm Society, which is the EP's kind of version of American College of Cardiology. And I was also doing a lot of advisory work with industry, got to know people at Medtronic very well. And then I was a physician representative for Medtronic to FDA with the MICRA panel. Mm-hmm. I just got to know everyone. And when the job came open, if you remember, David Steinhaus was kind of stepping down from that role in order to run heart failure. I interviewed for the role. It was just the right time. Everything kind of clicked and it seemed like the right next adventure to take on.
That's great. What, we often ask physicians about that move. Did you continue to practice at all? Or did you completely?
I didn't. I thought it was going to be too complicated to do that.
Yeah. Did you miss it?
And you know, no one really wants a doctor that's working, you know, one day a week. At least I don't. So kind of cut the practice, but kept the ties up with a lot of colleagues. I also felt like when you went to a new role, you just had to dedicate yourself to it and not have, you know, a foot in each canoe. And it was fun because rather than going the kind of the classic medical affairs route, I got more into kind of the portfolio management, the early technology side. And as the CMO, I had BD and then strategy reporting to me. So I got see kind of a different aspect of the CRM group at that time than most kind of CMOs would get to interact with.
So that might lead us to my next question about your current title. You're Vice President and General Manager of Cardiac Pacing Therapies. Most CMOs I talk to, I think they still feel that they're physicians working at a company, but they're still physicians, I think, first and foremost. This is a transition away from your role being a physician and into being a business lead. How did that come to be? And was that a tough move for you? Or it sounds like you had those entities reporting to you. So maybe you really got to see, this is fun. This is cool running a business.
Yeah, no, look, it's a great question. And you know, what happened was we were looking and working on the strategies around pacing. And as we'll probably get into, like pacing was undergoing this incredible change with leadless pacing or microproduct and conduction system pacing. That opened the door to really redefining what the pacing market could look like. And at that point, you know, what became really compelling to me was, how do you lead that change? How do you kind of take a 65-year-old business and reshape how people think about it, whether it's our own team or kind of communicating that up within the leadership of Medtronic to get that interest? And so for me, it was, one, the opportunity to really kind of stretch a bit and try to lead that change. And also, to your point, like learn about some of the things I didn't know as much about, you know, the operations piece, some of the commercial aspects, and just, you know, personal growth and stretching, you know, get a little uncomfortable.
That's great. Was it uncomfortable at start, or did it feel
It was. Feel right? I will tell you. I benefited from the medical experience of internship and residency, where, like, again, you're super uncomfortable and you're learning. But I also had learned from that just tincture of time, like, give yourself some time to get comfortable, and you'll figure out what's in, you know, you're overwhelmed with data. And then you have to kind of figure out, okay, this one's important, this thing is less important, and who on my team can I delegate and trust? And it was the same thing. I just had to call upon that experience to say, just, you know, give this a little time, we'll get there. We'll get there. I'm still learning a ton. I don't, you know, there's still a lot to learn. But that comfort level, I certainly borrowed from my medical experience for this.
No, it's great to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And it's a point I kind of drive home to my kids, like, I went to college and he's having a hard time. I'm like, yeah, like, you're studying engineering. It's supposed to be hard. Like, this is really hard.
It's going
to
make you better.
It's going to make you better, but it's hard, and you should be stressed and tired, and you're doing everything right. It's cool. And I strive to be uncomfortable all the time myself, and I'm pretty good at it. So,
you know, it's fun. It's a challenge. It keeps you.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's talk about the business that you're leading. I mean, this is kind of the founding pillar, the flagship. Where does it fit in the organization, and how do you feel running basically what had been the first pole of the tent that's now Medtronic?
So first off, that's a total honor. Like, to be able to kind of lead this group and work with this group as the original piece, you know, I think, as you've talked before, the Medtronic mission is so special. And this is what kind of the development of the pacing business, what led, you know, Earl Bakken to write the mission. So you really feel, the group as a whole feels so connected with the history of Medtronic. Mm-hmm. And so it's a ton of fun to be in the role. The role itself is part of the larger cardiac rhythm group, which is pacers, defibrillators, and our insertable implantable diagnostic link. And then that fits within the larger cardiovascular portfolio. But it's still an important aspect of Medtronic's revenue and earnings.
So what has been your focus? I mean, Micra is a big part of what you do, and you've talked about that earlier. Talk a bit about Micra. Can you explain briefly what it does and what makes it unique as far as how pacemakers go?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like, if you take one step back, I think what I'd say is, you know, pacing is one of the oldest med tech devices, 65 or so years, and there's been a lot of advances. Mm-hmm. And if you kind of try to categorize those, I put them into two categories. One is improving the patient experience. So making devices smaller, making them last longer, allowing them to communicate, MRI compatibility, all those things fall into that bucket. And the second bucket is making pacing more physiologic. In other words, how do you make a paced beat look as much as possible like a heart's normal heartbeat? And I think Micra falls in that first bucket perfectly. And the reason is, even though pacing is a mature technology, it still has its kind of weak points. And the weak points, if you will, are the fact that you have this titanium device with a battery and a circuit under the skin and the chest, and you have wires going from that through the vasculature into the heart. Mm-hmm. And even though the complication rates from traditional pacemakers are really low, that's where most of them are, is the leads and the pocket. And so what better way to improve them than to just get rid of them, right? It's not a faster horse, it's moving to the car. And so Micra does that, right? It drops the size of the pacemaker over 90%. It's about 0.8 cc's. Think a vitamin tablet. It goes directly in the heart, and it's still the smallest pacemaker around after 10 years. And what's been amazing is when you look at the clinical data, when you look at kind of 5 years out from implant, it cuts the complication rates related to pacemakers in half. Now, they're already low, but you even take them down that much further. And so it's been a really impressive story about kind of, you know, how do you redefine your own product and make it, you know, orders of magnitude better.
All right, let's take a quick break from this interview to continue my conversation with our sponsor, Confluent Medical.
I'm here with Tom Ditter. He is Senior Director of Product Development at Confluent Medical. Tom, Nitinol is growing in popularity. We're seeing more and more OEMs are turning to it. This alloy has shape memory. It has super elastic properties. Can you explain how Confluent sets itself apart from other Nitinol suppliers?
Well, Confluent has over 30 years of experience in the design and processing of Nitinol. But beyond that expertise, Confluent identified a Nitinol supply chain gap. They invested over $100 million across the supply chain. Most recently, they just made an investment of over $50 million in additional melt and conversion capacity, becoming the fulfillment partner for one of the largest melt suppliers in the industry.
So, Tom, we're hearing so much about Nitinol's super elastic and shape memory properties. It makes it an ideal alloy, specifically within the neurovascular space. Can you speak to how Confluent's expertise is able to meet the growing demands for OEMs in the neurovascular market?
Yes, for neurovascular applications, durability is a major consideration, and Confluent Medical has invested heavily in the development and processing of high purity alloys for increased durability and fatigue resistance. Our material SE508 ELI is one of the highest purity materials available and ideal for high cycle fatigue applications, as found in neurovascular devices. Additionally, Confluent specializes in high precision polymer tubing, such as FilmCast PTFE. This makes us unique in the neurovascular space in that we can offer PTFE with thinner walls and larger diameters, making it ideal for large diameter aspiration catheters.
So, Tom, that's super interesting about the neurovascular space. So what does the future look like for Nitinol in the neurovascular device market?
The demand for minimally invasive procedures is growing, so we can expect to see Nitinol as a key alloy for these devices. Future applications such as neurovascular devices will need to have a smaller profile with an emphasis on durability. Additionally, high purity Nitinol is needed to address high fatigue applications to prevent fracture and improve longevity for patients.
Well, this has been really entertaining and insightful, Tom. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you, Tom. Glad to be with you.
And thanks to Confluent Medical for sponsoring this episode. If you'd like to find out more about Confluent Medical, go to confluentmedical.com or, interestingly enough, nitinol.com.
And let's zoom out a little more and just help us understand the role of the pacemaker.
Yeah.
What's its function? And with Micra, without its leads, how is it doing what it needs to do in the area of the heart where it needs to do it if there's not a lead or something precise taking the energy there?
So I think the most simple way to put it, a pacemaker is a fancy clock. You have this device and you tell it in the setting of a patient whose heart rate is too slow, you basically tell this device, I want the patient at this heart rate, maybe at rest, one heart rate and an exercise another, and it watches. And if it sees that heart rate, it sits and does nothing. And if it doesn't, it will pace either the upper chamber, the atrium, or the lower chamber, the ventricle, or both, and reestablish that heart rate that's desired to make the patient feel better. Micra, what it is able to do by being right in the heart tissue is stimulate the heart and sense the heart at the same time to know exactly what's going on. It's also got an accelerometer in it, so it can get a sense of what's going on outside the heart, exercise and all that. I think what's really interesting is the ability, particularly of our Micra AV product, to not only sense and pace the ventricle, but also sense the atrium without the traditional wire or electrical connection. And it does that by sensing the heart's motion and interpreting that in the appropriate way to understand when the right time to pace is. That was a big breakthrough. It's super, super interesting. And I think the reason why we went that route is that, as we talked about, the goal of leadless pacing is really complication reduction and improvement of the experience, right? You get rid of this pocket, this incision, so patients aren't reminded. To do that, you want to have one device. You want this as simple as possible. The minute you add multiple small leadless devices, you're just doubling and amplifying the follow-up, the complications, and then you're removing the real value proposition. So that's why when we've been working on our Micra line, it's always around trying to have a single device approach to solving the pacing needs.
I love that you mentioned the relationship that the patients have with the pacemakers. When you mentioned earlier on that the implant was that you could, visible in the chest, you had the leads running through the vessels. I imagine having one and seeing it every day. What kind of relationship did your patients have with their pacemakers? Obviously, they're grateful for it. It's keeping them alive, but it's also a constant reminder of something that they don't want to be reminded of.
100%. So I think on the one side, you're right. Like, people would come back just feeling better and loved it. I did have one particular patient who really accentuated why this is so important. And when I told him about needing a pacemaker, he said, well, you know, does that mean I have to sell my house and move into a nursing home? And I was like, no, why would you think that? He said, well, only old people have pacemakers and have the scar. And I said, no, like, the idea of this is to make you feel better and liberate you from needing that. And what we've quickly seen is for patients, this idea of the invisibility of a leadless pacemaker is just incredibly compelling and wonderful. I think the hard part for us is in a medical community where we measure hospitalization and mortality or complications, we're pretty bad at understanding things and how to measure things like patient satisfaction, unfortunately. But I think it's a huge part of it. And that's why at the top I was saying kind of this concept of, you know, making advancements to improve the patient experience is so critical.
So you've got Micra, it's leadless, it's small, you've eliminated that complicated or that complicated relationship. Where do we go with Micra and your products next? What is it currently able to do? What are you hoping to make it able to do? It seems like it could be a real central point of data for the heart.
Yeah. So the next step is to be able to not only, you know, sense the atrium and pace the ventricle, but to sense and pace both chambers. Mm-hmm. And so, and that would allow us to kind of treat sick sinus syndrome and not just heart block. The two dominant rhythm problems that people have. And so to do that, we need to build a version of Micra that can pace and sense in both chambers. But again, your mind would naturally take you to, I'll put one device in each chamber and have them talk to each other. And what we've learned is it removes the value proposition related to complication reduction. It's very expensive on an energy front. So what we are actually working on is a single device sitting in one spot in the heart to do both. And I think that's going to be a tremendous advancement going forward.
Talk a bit about that device. What would it, or as much as you can,
what would
it look like? What's the size and what are some
complete functions? Size, right now, we're looking at a device that isn't that much bigger than current Micra. It would sit at a unique portion of the right atrium that allows you kind of access to the left ventricle as well. I can't really get into how we fixate that, but we have freestanding devices in animals now being tested. And looking forward to, you know, human studies soon and bringing that forward. So we're super excited about it.
So that's exciting news for Micra. What else has you excited and what else are you working on there?
Yeah, I think the other big change that's been going on is the emergence of conduction system pacing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when we talked a little bit ago, right, when why do people need pacers? Their heart rates are too slow. What controls the heart rate in a heart is some specialized heart cells called the conduction system. This starts the impulse in the upper chamber and sends it down to the lower chamber, these specialized cells. And they do two things. One, they control the heart rate, and two, they control the coordination of all the chambers of the heart, the upper chambers, the atria, the lower chambers, the ventricles. And so traditional pacemakers, when the conduction system kind of breaks, if you will, can restore the normal rate, but up until now really haven't restored that normal coordination function. And the big change now is rather than just putting a Micra or a pacing lead kind of anywhere in the heart muscle, we take our leads and direct them specifically into these conduction system fibers. And then you reestablish both normal heart rate and that heart's normal coordination. So it's another big advancement.
And are you running, where are you in the development of products for this? You're running a trial?
Yeah. So we've got, Our 3830 lead is a special lead designed to go through a catheter so that you can direct it there. We've got delivery tools coming and new pacemakers that have algorithms specific towards that. But I think what's really exciting about conduction system pacing is because you can create now an almost normal heartbeat with pacing, it opens the door to doing new things with pacing beyond just treating slow heart rates.
Mm-hmm. As we're introducing these, you're introducing these new devices, not me. I imagine we're learning a lot about heart failure. I mean, it's such a, just the term heart failure is just such a term. It's such a heavy term and it's so comprehensive. What are we learning about heart failure from as we find new ways to treat the heart? And what are some of the things that we're discovering that maybe are concerning or hopeful?
Yeah, no, this is, where the conduction system pacing piece really comes in. So when you have reproduce the normal heartbeat, you can actually think of treating the heart for other than slow heart rates. Mm-hmm. And when you look at a subtype of heart failure called heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, which is a subtype of heart failure where the heart is too stiff, it doesn't fill well. And as a result, it doesn't pump as well, and then kind of pressure elevates in the lungs and you get shortness of breath. It's a very simplistic view of it, but so the heart failure people would be a little upset with that description, but I think for all okay. for our purposes, it's fine. Yeah. Look, traditionally, people have thought, well, we should slow the heart rate down to allow it to fill better. There have been some studies now with pacing that have suggested that maybe the opposite is true. And that if we slightly elevate the heart rate, we can actually have the heart perform better and not increase its internal pressures. And so there's been one big study that was published out of the Vermont group that we supported, showing that in patients who did have a need for a pacemaker, if they also had heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, or HFpEF as we call it, and you pace them at a higher rate than you would normally do it, they actually felt better and did better. And so that then leads to this new trial we're working on called Elevate, where we're asking the question, is that true in patients who don't necessarily have a traditional pacemaker indication, but we think their heart rate is lower than it should be from the standpoint of treating their HFpEF?
I've thought that the reason we were lowering the heart rate was just it was a healthier pace to be at. It was going too fast. It was dangerous. I didn't realize that the purpose for slowing the heart rate really to let it give it more time to fill more and to pump more.
So in HFpEF, that was the idea. In HFrEF, where you know the heart rate with reduced ejection, the beta blockers, you know, to slow the heart rate were really about multiple different. They had multiple effects. So it gets complicated based on what type of heart failure you have. And that's why what's exciting about this study is it's finding a subgroup of patients where we think we can make a difference with pacing. And not only that, it's not a one size fits all. It's personalized. So we look at a person's heart performance and their size and adjust the heart rate accordingly. And in general, it comes from some studies that show that, you know, taller people have slightly slower heart rates than shorter people. And so what this also does is actually allows us to treat across kind of patients with different sizes, but also different genders. Women tend to be smaller. And so having a personalized heart rate means we can actually treat women better in a trial like this.
That's fascinating. So we'll start to wrap up, but I mean, what's kind of interesting to me is we began this conversation talking about this business's role as being the primary business at Medtronic. For legacy business, there's a lot of innovation coming. Like you've planted these flags in the heart with the pacemakers, you're making them smaller, you're finding new functions, and now you're finding new ways to treat the heart even more. So this is an older business, but in a way you're back to blazing new trails. Is that how you feel?
It, I think you said it perfectly. Look, I think internally we think about pacing entering a next era. We've talked about it as a rebirth of pacing or a renaissance. I think when I was in front of the board a couple years ago, I said the mature business has turned into a rambunctious toddler again. but look, it's even bigger than just that one trial. You know, we see pacing can be deployed in other ways. You know, the technology changes of leadless and conduction system allow you to consider deploying pacing in multiple ways. So HFpEF is one of them. As you may know, we have a partnership with Orchestra Biomed, a company that developed an algorithm for using a pacemaker to treat hypertension. So we have a big trial around that. We have some other ideas outside of hypertension and HFpEF, but those are big areas to tackle. And I think what's really fun here is you could imagine a world in 5-7 years. Again, all this is investigational, but you can imagine a world in 5 or 7 years where bradycardia is a minority of what we do with pacemakers, and pacemakers extend into a whole new set of areas like hypertension and HFpEF.
Wow. So I want to circle back to and conclude the conversation talking about your career moves. You created quite a stir amongst the news team a few weeks ago when you posted on LinkedIn and announced this was your first time you posted on LinkedIn, and we were like, what? Is that even possible? So welcome to the LinkedIn community.
So I'm a little behind the times, what you're telling me. I'm a dinosaur.
No, you're getting yourself out there. You're making yourself uncomfortable. But I'm asking this because, you know, LinkedIn is obviously a big career tool. How do you communicate with younger engineers and such who want to get into med tech? Has this business traditionally been seen as not an area where people who want to work in the next big thing would go to? But to your point earlier, now it is, and now it's becoming a hotter field. Where do you feel this is in career, and what advice would you give to folks kind of looking
look,
for this?
I think it's all about trying to find opportunities to find paradigm shifts, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody, 10 years ago, everyone thought kind of pacing was a flat and boring market. As I used to joke when I was a physician and you'd come to Medtronic, the person who ran pacing was the one who ate dinner alone. No one really cared, right? And now it's interesting again. And it's, again, if you continue to go back to what can I do to improve the patient experience and how do I make any therapy more physiologic? How does it solve a physiologic problem? You open doors and you mix that with the technical capabilities that are second to none in a place like Medtronic. And you can think about a new way to pace with conduction system or this radical idea of one device kind of pacing the heart, a leadless device from inside. And that then opens the doors to kind of new market segments. And so I don't know, I think you got to keep your imagination alive. And if you focus on the patient, there's so many opportunities you can unlock in what are traditionally kind of, you know, stagnant areas.
Yeah, how about put on your doctor scrubs for a moment? How do you see that field? The practice of this, the delivery of these devices, that changing in the next decade?
You know, I think in the background, we also want to make this as easy and democratized as possible. You know, as we were talking before we started, the EP community is facing massive, so not just changes in pacing, but in ablation with pulse field ablation. You know, we want to make sure that, you know, if these trials are positive and that ablation space continues to grow, which it should, like there's enough people to serve the patients who can be helped. Mm-hmm. So from a physician standpoint, the idea that you could take, let's say, a group of patients like who have HFpEF, who just, there just aren't many opportunities to make them feel better and change the course of their care. I mean, that's why we're all doing this. That's why we all do this. I'm just doing it from wearing a different hat.
Absolutely. All right. Well, this has been great to reconnect with you. Enjoy your breakfast with your patient. That's pretty exciting. Patient.
He just texted me out of the blue. It was just so heartwarming to get that email. So
I bet. Well, Robert, thank you for joining us on the podcast. We look forward to tracking your success.
It was great. Thanks, Tom.
Well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks, a weekly podcast. Thank you to our sponsor, Confluent Medical. Always great to have their support of Device Talks. Once again, our new Women in MedTech podcast is out. Make sure you check out the Device Talks podcast network and every major podcast player for that exciting start of a great new series. Also, please make sure you go to massdevice.com to check out our new Mass Device MedTech Market Intelligence Report on the continuous glucose monitoring market. And finally, make sure you join us Tuesday, November 11th at 4 p.m. Eastern for our Device Talks Tuesday's episode, When and Why Your Design Needs Micro Molding. You can go to devicetalks.com to check that out. All right, well, that is a wrap, folks. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. Make sure you do subscribe to the Device Talks Podcast Network and connect with me on LinkedIn. Connect with Kayleen Brown on LinkedIn, Chris Newmarker, and Crystal Larson as well. And please make sure you follow Device Talks. We'd love to have your help in spreading MedTech's best messaging. So thanks, everybody, for listening to the Device Talks Weekly Podcast.